This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll begin today in New Hampshire, where the state Supreme Court is deciding a case that victims' rights advocates say could undo more than 40 years of work on rape shield laws. The court is considering whether to unseal details of a victim's sexual history, effectively making them public. So some background here. In 2014, Seth Mazzaglia was convicted of strangling 19-year-old Lizzie Marriott to death and then raping her. Mazzaglia was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison. During the trial, he claimed that Marriott died during consensual rough sex, and the defense wanted to introduce additional material about Marriott's past to support that claim. However, the judge in the initial trial ruled that under New Hampshire's rape shield law, Marriott's sexual history was not relevant to the case. Well, Mazzaglia's attorney is contesting that decision upon appeal, arguing that Marriott's sexual history should be unsealed and made public. The New Hampshire Supreme Court ordered the information unsealed on June 10th, that happened a little earlier, but stayed its own order soon thereafter, agreeing to keep it sealed until oral arguments next month. So a lot could happen on this case in September. Right now, we're going to hear from both attorneys in this case. First, Christopher Johnson. He's New Hampshire's chief public appellate defender. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So first of all, make your argument to us. Why do you think Marriott's sexual history should be made public during the appeals process?
Well, I think there's two misconceptions that people need to understand about this. So the first misconception is about what the rape shield law is and what it isn't. What it is not is a principle that prior consensual sexual behavior of a complainant is never admissible in court. That is not the rule. The rule is that such information is presumptively inadmissible, but when the defendant's constitutional right to a fair trial requires that it be admitted, it has to be admitted. We don't do unfair trials in this country, not on purpose. And so when the fairness of the trial requires that the jury hear the information, they have to hear it. So now in this case, what happened was in the Superior Court, the trial court, there was a lengthy discussion about certain evidence that the defense said had to be admitted for Mr. Mazzaglia's trial to be fair.
Okay.
The trial judge ended up disagreeing with that. And in that issue, the rightness or wrongness of the trial court's ruling is the exclusive subject of Mr. Mazzaglia's Supreme Court appeal.
Are you at liberty to tell us anything about the details of that decision or the specifics of Lizzie Marriott's sexual history that could help us understand why you're making the argument that it is relevant?
Right. No, and that's exactly the point. No, I'm not. And that gets to my second point about, I think, what's not really that precisely understood here, is there is a procedural novelty that is being proposed in this case, but it is not by the defense. It has always been true that information about prior consensual sexual history is treated outside the presence of the public in the trial court, but not on appeal. So we're not trying to change anything about the way rape shield law has worked procedurally in New Hampshire forever. We just want the same process that defendants have always in the past had when they appeal, arguing that a trial judge's ruling made their trial unfair.
As you well know, there are many people who disagree with you. I mean, there's a lot of folks who say that the rape shield laws were put into place to make the entire system of criminal justice, whether or not be initial trials or appeals, less traumatizing to victims and their families. And this could overturn that. This could establish a precedent in opposition to that.
Well, that's where I disagree. I don't think that's right. It has always been true that these matters have been conducted secretly in trials, but not secretly on appeals. If you look at New Hampshire published Supreme Court opinions on rape shield issues, you will see in them described the content of the information that was at issue.
Okay. Well,
so we are not talking about changing the rape shield protection as it applies in trials.
I see. So you want the information to be public so that everyone can see the reasoning behind the justice's decision?
Right. Usually, in any kind of a case, you go to the New Hampshire Supreme Court clerk's office and you say, I'm interested in state of New Hampshire versus so-and-so. I'd like to see what the lawyers are arguing in that case. Can you give me the file? And they will say yes. And you will find in that file detailed written arguments that the lawyers have filed explaining why the trial was unfair, and detailed written arguments why that the state has filed in defense of the correctness of the trial judge's rulings. In Mr. Mazzaglia's case, you go, I mean, this is not records we're talking about or some sort of therapeutic documents. We're talking about the legal arguments the parties have made. So if you go to the Supreme Court and say, I'd like to see the file, but the legal arguments in the Mazzaglia case, they will say, no, you can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and maybe most important, in this case, if I don't win, if Mr. Mazzaglia doesn't win his appeal, when that opinion comes out, it's going to say, Mr. Mazzaglia has made some arguments about certain evidence which we are not at liberty to describe. We therefore cannot explain in public our reasons for rejecting those arguments. However, we can let you all know that we have, if it goes this way, affirmed his conviction and his sentence for life in prison without possibility of parole. Under separate order, we'll issue an opinion that actually explains the reasoning, but that will be available only to the lawyers.
Yeah. Let's get down to the heart of the matter about why this is drawing so very much attention, let alone the potential legal precedent set here. I mean, you were tasked with defending the appeals process of a client who was convicted of strangling a young woman and then raping her. I mean, should her personal life, her sexual history become a matter of public record, she is no longer here to defend herself or to dispute that record. I mean, that's kind of fundamentally what some people are so objecting to.
Yeah.
Your client is convicted of having committed a horrible crime.
Well, so two things I would say about that. First is, you know, our legal system wouldn't be worth the paper it's written on if it were not the case that even the least popular of us have a fundamental right to fair process. And that's all I'm asking for Mr. Mazzaglia, a fair appellate process, the same appellate process anybody else gets. My second point would be, you know, the concerns you have raised about Ms. Marriott's privacy are absolutely legitimate and are not in dispute. I mean, yes, her privacy has significant value, and it is what makes this a difficult question. My point is, and I think the other side seems not to appreciate this or agree with it, is that there is also, you know, if we elevate privacy above fairness and give him this sort of second-class secret, you know, public is excluded from appellate process, that also is a cost that has to be weighed in the balance.
Well, Chris Johnson is New Hampshire's chief public appellate defender. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
And just a point of clarification, Johnson is actually seeking to overturn his client's conviction as part of this appeal. Well, we're joined now by Meg Garvin, who represents the Marriott family. She's also executive director of the National Crime Victim Law Institute and a professor at Lewis and Clark Law School in Portland, Oregon. Meg Garvin, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So first of all, give me your reaction to how Christopher Johnson ended that conversation, basically saying that, you know, that he sees that that there's a tension between privacy and his client's right to a fair appeals process, and he worries that privacy is trumping his client's rights.
Well, certainly respect the notion of fair trial, fair appellate process. All of that is absolutely critical to a proper functioning system, and the Marriott certainly recognize that. What I think is being misunderstood here is that protecting of privacy, particularly when that privacy is about irrelevant information, i.e. prior sexual history that has already been ruled on multiple times to be irrelevant to the case at hand, protecting that privacy is in fact what is fair here. So I don't think there's a conflict between privacy and fairness. In fact, at times the protection of privacy is what is most critical to a fair process. Otherwise, what we have is one person impacted by this crime, i.e. the defendant getting fairness, and the victim, also a person impacted by the crime, not getting fairness. When we think about fundamental fairness, it has to be to everyone in the system, and we have to pay attention to it equally for everyone. And here that demands privacy over irrelevant information.
Well, what's your view of what Johnson told us about that there's, quote, a procedural novelty being proposed here, and he says it's not being proposed by the defense, that the rules in New Hampshire have, in his words, always been different on appeal, and that information, trial information that was sealed and secret in the initial trials, don't necessarily have to be secret on appeal. He says that that's an extant a tradition in New Hampshire.
Well, a couple of things with regard to trial-level protections and appellate-level protections. First and foremost, one of the things that's not being talked about sufficiently in this case is that in addition to Rape Shield, there are straight crime victims' rights provisions at stake here. And included in those are the right of victims to be treated with fairness and with respect for their dignity and privacy, quote, throughout the criminal justice process, end quote. That's black letter law in New Hampshire. And that has not been sufficiently analyzed in prior cases. What does it mean to protect privacy throughout the criminal justice process? So that's one piece that this court is actually going to entertain arguments and consider what is the weight of that provision that really just hasn't been presented in the past. The second thing is, what we have in place in this case are sealed documents, sealed conversations, sealed arguments, arguments that were made to the court. And so what we have in place is a trial court that put in place a seal. And so what is currently being litigated is, does that seal stay in place during the pendency of the appellate court process until the court determines whether the trial court erred or not? So fundamentally what's at stake is, do you unseal everything now, even though maybe the trial court properly sealed it, or do you wait and analyze whether the trial court erred or not?
Okay, so in other words, on the 21st of September, when the New Hampshire State Supreme Court hears oral argument, they're going to be hearing about this question of sealing, maintaining the seal or unsealing these aspects of the initial trial that had to do with Lizzie Marriott's personal life. And this conversation is happening before the merits of the appeal itself are going to be discussed before the state Supreme Court.
Correct.
Does that trouble you?
Well, it certainly puts the horse before the cart, or however that
expression
goes.
The cart before the horse, yeah.
Cart before the horse. Yeah, the horse before the cart would be proper. It really is backwards, because what you want to do is make sure that everyone's rights are protected to the greatest extent possible, right, until there's a moment when you have to prioritize. What happened here is that privacy prevailed at the trial court level, including through a seal of documents. What is happening later in September is just an analysis of, do you keep those sealed for now? Right? Now, the Marriotts would certainly argue that they should never come out. They've been ruled irrelevant, right? And truthfully, prior sexual history of victims is irrelevant. Who I had sex with this morning is not relevant to whether I'm raped this afternoon. I mean, that's a fundamental premise of Rape Shield. That would be the Marriott's position. However, minimally, you're putting the cart before the horse if you say, well, let's unseal it now, even though we're not talking about the merits yet. Mm. And that just shouldn't happen.
Well, say that come September, following these oral arguments in New Hampshire, just say, hypothetically, that the New Hampshire State Supreme Court decides to maintain the seal. Then would this all have been blown over and no harm or damage done to this 40-year body of Rape Shield law that people are now highly concerned about?
Well, if it all stays sealed, hopefully that does mean ultimately that there's a recognition of the respect that Rape Shield put in place for privacy rights, right? Rape Shield is just a device for protecting fundamental privacy, which the U.S. Supreme Court has recognized exists in the U.S. Constitution. So if it stays in place, then what will have happened is a recent court will have re-recognized the importance of privacy in the proper functioning of our justice system.
And if it doesn't stay good. And if it doesn't stay in place?
Then I think the country as a whole needs to be a little concerned about, what does this mean for sexual assault victims? What does it mean for anyone who wants to access the justice system? Is the price that you have to pay for accessing justice that your entire life, including allegations that you contest, is that all going to be put on parade in an internet age when it will live on in perpetuity? That is too high of a price for people to pay for accessing justice. So if it goes that way, I think we have some serious consideration as a country about, are there additional laws we need to put in place to ensure that privacy is intact?
Well, Meg Garvin is co-counsel for the family of Lizzie Marriott. She's also executive director of the National Crime Victim Law Institute and a professor at Lewis and Clark Law School in Portland, Oregon. Meg Garvin, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much.
And as we said, the New Hampshire State Supreme Court is set to hear oral arguments on this case on September 21st. We'll be definitely keeping our eye on what transpires there. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.